Welcome to the Mayo Clinic Ophthalmology Podcast on all things ophthalmology brought to you by Mayo Clinic. I'm your host, Dr. Andrea Tooley.
And I'm Dr. Eric Bothan. We're here to bring you the latest and greatest in ophthalmology, medicine, and more.
In today's podcast, we visit with Dr. Ashley Bernheisel, a cornea specialist and refractive surgeon here at the Mayo Clinic who has an expertise in global health. Dr. Bernheisel will give us a glimpse into what it means to have a career in global health and what it means also for residents and training programs.
Dr. Ashley Bernheisel is a cornea and refractive surgeon, assistant professor of ophthalmology, and past global ophthalmology fellow with a master's in public health from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. She is an accomplished ophthalmologist and a leading voice in the field of global ophthalmology, as well as cornea and refractive surgery. We are so happy to have you here today, Dr. Bernheisel. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure to sit down and have this discussion. There's a lot of enthusiasm about global health and certainly how people define that differently and how much they invest in it. We're excited to hear your story and how it's been part of your career and continues to blossom. So define for us what, first of all, what is global health or global health in ophthalmology for you as you see your field?
Yeah. So I think it, within ophthalmology, a lot of people are just referring to it as global ophthalmology, kind of to take from global health to global ophthalmology. And, you know, it used to be called international ophthalmology. And I think the term global is really supposed to encompass our local communities and our international communities. And that's why the word global, where that's kind of come from. And so because of that, it can really be anything. It can be serving your local community, doing free eye screenings. It can be a research. It can be, you know, making long-term partners abroad. So it's all encompassing. So I knew I wanted to do global health first before I knew I wanted to do ophthalmology. I was really inspired by Paul Farmer and read some of his books when I was, I think even as early as high school or at least undergrad, but didn't really know what I wanted to do. I went to med school thinking I wanted to do internal medicine or general surgery, but just couldn't find where I could fit in global health the best. And eventually took a year, went to Ghana, spent a year there doing research on pediatric HIV. Still kind of had that feeling of, you know, how does really one person make a difference somewhere? I just kind of felt even more overwhelmed after that. When I got home, I went to a fundraiser for the Moran Eye Center and some of their outreach work and really saw how you could make such a difference in people's life with eye care, basically. And so that's the night I decided on it. And then shortly after residency, decided that I wanted to do both global ophthalmology and a master's in public health. So I did my cornea fellowship and decided that I wanted my public health degree to kind of guide my year in global ophthalmology. So that's why I decided to do cornea first, then do a master's in London. And then I finished up with that global ophthalmology fellowship at the Moran Eye Center.
I love hearing your story and how really outreach has been at the center, kind of guiding you along the way. I feel like global ophthalmology or international ophthalmology, outreach, all these things are real buzzwords right now. And that's great. I mean, that's fantastic that people are, there's a reignited passion for spending time abroad or doing outreach or working. I see that a lot with our trainees, especially with the applicants every year. Every single residency application says, yeah, I want to do international work, which I think is really fantastic. I'm curious to hear what your experience was like as a student working in Ghana for a year and how you felt like you were able to contribute. One thing I wrestle with, and I traveled too in medical, right before medical school, I went to Tanzania for a summer and it was transformative. But I wrestle with this thought of kind of volunteerism and unwittingly taking more from the location than you're able to give. And that's something that I think about a lot when our students are so interested in traveling. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that and kind of how you wrestled with that and then your own experience.
Yeah. So in Ghana, I was between my third and fourth year of medical school. So I just didn't have, you know, you think you know so much as a medical student, but you're still learning, and got there and really realized that there was just, you know, a lot I felt like I couldn't do. And also that feeling of like, who am I thinking that I actually can do something? And like, maybe I shouldn't. This Western view of like, let's go be the saviors of these communities. And I think that really for a time while I was actually in Ghana, I felt pretty actually down about that. Like I wanted to do something, but realizing like maybe it's not my place. And maybe that's actually just very entitled of me to think that. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of a hard place that I was in. I think what I've come, you know, over time to realize is that it really needs to be more of a partnership. I know that's obvious. And it's not that I didn't know that at the time, but I think when it's looked at as a collaboration and you go to the community asking, you know, what can I do for you? You know, you're always going to get something out of it yourself. But if you come at it from a perspective of the only thing I really can contribute is maybe my medical knowledge, maybe my research background, maybe a grant, you know, these kind of things, like what can I give that is really needed versus that I going to come in and know what this is best for this community. And I think that's really where I kind of changed from grappling with those issues to kind of feeling more confident about it and more passionate about it. Mm-hmm.
To me, I think it's similar to medical students and residents coming on to ophthalmology even the first time or mm-hmm. coming to Healthy. You come in with such altruistic hopes and energy, and then you quickly realize how little you know and how you can't match your contribution. And even the ways you might like to contribute sometimes probably get in the way with what needs to happen for the greater good. But it's also such an interesting balance because you need ideally to give them that exposure for them to understand what their future footprint might be. It's interesting how even your first year, first month of ophthalmology, you're more of an ophthalmology resident tourist. Absolutely. But by the time you're a chief resident or a fellow or 10 years into practice, you understand your role, your communication differently. And I think of the same thing. It's I think the important part is communicating, as you're saying, the tourism aspect of it. Go and observe, go and witness, go and be compelled, but don't go with an agenda that you're going to be the change yourself as much as a support figure.
Yeah, to further answer that question, I'm already urging our residents here to think about when they're looking at where they would like to go, how are they going to contribute more than what are they going to get out of it?
Yep.
You know, and I think we're going to talk about this a little bit more, but things like people want to do surgery and get those kind of things out of a trip. But I'm really talking about like, well, what is it that you can provide? I want you to reach out before you even go. I want you to come up with a project that you are actually going to be contributing. And I think you're going to learn the most from that. And I actually think they're going to get the most out of it because, again, they might be in that situation where they think they're going to go help. And then they realize that they're really not that helpful in terms of like doing surgery and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Another thing is kind of keeping the flame alive that I think is hard as a trainee. And I definitely saw this in myself when you really kind of have to put those interests on the back burner to go through your own residency and fellowship. And you did that, having to go through residency, cornea, fellowship. So how do you maintain your passion for global work while you really have to take a step back until you're equipped to actually go and help?
Yeah, that's a great question, because there's waxing and waning times where I feel more energetic about it. I think getting together with groups of people that are interested in that as well and hearing what they're doing, I think that always really ignites my own passion and gets me excited again. For example, the Global Ophthalmology Summit that now AAO and a consortium, including now Mayo, is a part of. And really, again, seeing what other people are doing and just getting excited about it. I just kind of feel for me that it's, you know, initially it felt like an adventure, you know, like I wanted to go travel and see the world. And that was part of my motivation. Mm-hmm. Having a family, just traveling a lot and feeling like that same drive to just see the world necessarily kind of patters out. I think more of it becomes a feeling of obligation with being basically privileged comes a certain obligation. And so I think that's where I continue to do it.
One of the things too, talking about different people's interests and how you're marrying these to find roles to serve, share a little bit about your master's, because a lot of people don't have that opportunity or don't seek that opportunity to be academically contributing in this arena. They think of it, let me go serve and do some cataract surgeries or whatever it might be, or learn how to do those cataract surgeries. But talk to us about your master's and what journey was that and what fruit came out of it for you?
Sure. So I think that also comes from your point about taking away from the community accidentally, right? When you're going to serve someone and maybe you're actually doing more harm than good. So that was actually my main motivation for doing this master's, is I wanted to have the tools to serve a community in a way where I really wouldn't be doing more harm than good, and how to approach it in a respectful way. How do you come to the table and ask what a community needs? Like, how do you even start that? So that's why I wanted to do this master. And I really feel like I did get the tools to do that. It's public health based. All of your modules are basically examples of eye care, blindness in various low-income countries, low and middle-income countries, and you have to problem solve in that arena, which is really helpful. I mean, I think a general public health degree, you can learn that and apply it, but it's just really nice to have it in that kind of context. And then also all your teachers are doing that, so you get to kind of see what their projects are, and you make lasting relationships with them in terms of if there's something you want to do in the future. You know, most of the year are modules. Your classmates are other ophthalmologists, optometrists, or program directors for different, you know, NGOs, for example. So you're working with them throughout the year, and then you come up with a project, a thesis, and you write up that thesis at the end. And I think that more than anything else so far in my career has really driven the direction I want to go with this. Again, looking at big impact, you know, when you collaborate with a partner, when you start from the beginning, you look, what is this going to look like in 5 years and 10 years? And when am I going to be able to back out so that you're self-reliant? Mm-hmm. Things like that. Without that, I think I would still probably have a lot of that mission work mentality. And it really gave me the tools to, you know, take a step back, look at the bigger picture, and find a sustainable project.
And yours was in corneal transplantation in Africa. Is that?
Yeah, so I looked at corneal blindness and corneal transplantation and eye banking in sub-Saharan Africa. Found some interesting things with that. I don't know if we want to talk about that more, but we certainly can. And it was certainly, I think, one of the most valuable parts of my education so far.
You had mentioned the Global Ophthalmology Summit and the Global Consortium, and I'd love for you to expand on that because I think some of our listeners might not know about that. It's a fairly new initiative and you're really at the forefront of it. I'd love to hear more about what that is.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's really exciting. There's been two summits so far. The third one is going to be in Portland, Oregon this year. So the idea behind it is American Academy of Ophthalmology didn't want to say, like, we are in charge of global ophthalmology. And Moran Eye Center didn't want to say, people don't want to step on other people's feet when it comes to global ophthalmology, because it's supposed to be this collaborative effort, right? So the idea is that it is collaborative, and we have the American Academy of Ophthalmology supporting us, but we have various academic institutions that are also buying in, helping come up with some of the content, find speakers, and put on this event once a year. So it's a 4-day conference. The first day and the last day are a little bit shorter. And we just have speakers from all over the world come and tell us about their projects. We also obviously talk about some of our local disparities. Inner cities, you know, might have, especially, you know, children might have higher rates of uncorrected refractive error. We talk about, again, local stuff and global stuff. And we're really trying to make it as not Western centric. It's hard because it takes place in the US, and everyone who comes is for the most part really excited about stuff is from the US, but we try to get people to fly in and hear about people from all over the world and what they're doing. So it's really exciting.
I'm super excited about it. I'm going for the first time this year. I can't wait. And Mayo, like you said, has joined the consortium. Mm-hmm. So we've really stepped up to the plate, and that's all led by you. So I'm super excited to learn more. It's going to be great.
Thank you. Thanks for your support.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are the areas of interest for training programs? And for you, Dr. Tooley, as our head of our training program here, is that residents are so interested in getting this experience. We talked about how that sensitive balance is for what they expect to be doing. Mm-hmm. But the skill set of M6, or, you know, manual, you know, non-sutureless cataract surgery, and there's different versions of it. But share with us your understanding over the current educational steps that someone wanting to have that tool should think about and or put in place so it could be part of their career, you know, versus residency, some sort of global ophthalmology track program after residency, or something else that would build that skill set into their career. Share with us your take on that.
Yeah, that's great. So I think the place to start, is just kind of educating yourself online. AAO has a global ophthalmology curriculum. I guess we haven't really talked about that either. So that's something you could, if you're really interested, that's a great place to start. And there is a section on M6 that goes over the steps for you. So just kind of educating yourself, watch as many surgeries as you can just to kind of get that in mind. There are many simulators now. So if you go to the Global Ophthalmology Summit, there's going to be several simulators. There's going to be wet labs. And that's, again, an opportunity to get your hands wet. And various, again, programs, residencies will have a MSEX wet lab. We have one. And I think a lot of them do. And a lot of them have even NGOs come in and do some wet labs. So there's a lot of opportunities to get exposure. Now, if you really want to become an expert in it, that's where you really kind of have to make a decision to dedicate some portion after training towards learning how to do it. Now, previously, it was a little bit easier. I was lucky enough, you know, and again, we'll talk about kind of the debate around it, was lucky enough to do this during my residency, where I went to Aravind in India and got to do about 35, 40 MSEX surgeries with a lot of guidance. However, there have, you know, historically, there's been people who have come, maybe had high complication rates, are, you know, coming, doing surgery and leaving and not really seeing the consequences of it. And as a result, Aravind and Telganga are no longer offering that for residents. In fact, they really want you to be 3 years out of training before you go and do one of these training programs. And part of this is because they looked at their data and saw that they have a much higher complication rate from when they have people going basically for medical tourism. Yes, I mean, for me, it's really positively impacted my practice. I can do some of these black cataracts and even in our community. And so I think there was some benefit to it. But, you know, again, it's this feeling of, okay, people are coming into our country, operating on our people, you know, having a high complication rate and then leaving. And then we can't go to the US. We can't go and operate there. Is that fair? Not really. And so I think that's where that policy has really come from. And again, I think even though, you know, there's pros and cons to it, I think overall it really makes sense if you think about it from their perspective. But that doesn't mean it's not possible. Again, you just have to kind of make a decision. I'm going to go and do this. I'm going to take a break at some point in my practice and go there for a month and learn this, or more if you want. But I think a month is, you know, a good amount of time to learn the skill.
I think this is critical. And I'm so glad you're laying it out, because I hear so many residents and trainees and medical students who say, yeah, I want to take 2 weeks and go learn M6. And I think it's easy to just be misguided about the whole situation. And you have to stop and remember, you need to go into these experiences with a servant heart and not just, I'm going to go and learn this surgery and then go home. You know, it's not a pay to play rotation where you just learn a new surgical technique and then you get to go back home. I think we all need a reminder of that, because everybody's intentions are good at heart. You know, you want to help, you want to build up your surgical armamentarium so that you can help more people and do these complicated cases. Like, I get it. But it's easy to really kind of miss the purpose and the heart of the whole initiative. So I'm glad that we have leaders like you who are helping kind of make formal practices. Like, no, this is the best way to do it. That's going to help everybody.
Right. And one more thing I'll say about that is, I mean, honestly, learning M6 really should be for our own community, mm-hmm. not necessarily for going to do a bunch of surgeries in sub-Saharan Africa or Asia, because again, that's a skill that really they should be learning. And if you want to learn it so that you can teach it there, that's great too. Again, this is where this change in thought has been going on for the last few years is, you know, we really need to make this less about going, doing a bunch of surgery, or even just kind of this in and out thing. These need to be long-term partnerships. And I think that might also be where this is coming from. Like, if you're going to learn it, the reason should be that you really want to learn it for either your community, or you truly want to go and teach someone, not just like, oh, let me just get better at surgery in general by, again, doing a two-week rotation.
Mm-hmm. Or you're sort of as a goal of making that community include theirs. And as you're saying, it's mm-hmm. going to be a long term. You want their community to be your community too, and a partnership right. long term to be yeah. able to step in. So you commented at the beginning that your initial hopes were to serve in a bigger impact as a medical student or a trainee, and you realize how big that hope really seem to be. Mm-hmm. You know, at your point now, advising our residents and people coming in, and we have opportunities here at Mayo or through across ophthalmology. Share with us what compels you now and how you encourage residents, why it's so important to invest in this part of their career.
Yeah, that's a great question. So for me personally, I am still very much motivated by academic related activities. I like to set up some partnerships in the future. So for example, my passion, what gets me excited right now and what I'd like to do in terms of my next project, looking at, again, sub-Saharan Africa, given that my research was in cornea transplantation, eye banking, it's something that's still happening there and I think it still should happen, but it's just a large barrier to get over. To get up an eye bank running, to get cornea transplantation going, there's just so many moving parts. If you can imagine, you need to have basically law from the government, you need to have people willing to donate, you need to have surgeons who can do the surgery, and at the same time you have to, again, have an eye bank that's procuring the tissue. Huge. Yeah, and so you have to have people trained to have, you know, basically talk to people's families who've had someone pass away, grievance counselors. So it's just, there's a lot of moving parts, and so it's just hard to get up and running. So right now only Ethiopia and South Africa have eye banks that are functional. Again, not to say that other places can't, and I think they will, but what I've kind of realized is, again, once you actually need a cornea transplant, you're pretty late in the process anyway. So I've kind of been looking at, well, where can we get something going earlier? And there is a lot of keratoconus in sub-Saharan Africa. And so something low-hanging fruit is something like cross-linking, bringing that there. There are some places that are already successfully doing cross-linking. And again, you're not to get into the weeds here, but, you know, there's issues with if you're taking epithelium off and someone's lives an hour away or more, and is their cornea become infected? So they're doing a lot of epi on. The point is when I'm looking at a project, I'm trying to think, you know, again, what is going to have the biggest impact on the most amount of people, especially at younger ages? People with keratoconus are affected through adolescence on. And so if you can catch them earlier, then not only are you affecting, again, a lot of people, but you're affecting them earlier in life. When I look at a project, how can it have the biggest impact? Also, you know, you always have to look at acceptability. Is this something that, for whatever reason, we don't even understand, that's not going to be accepted in a certain community? There's something, you know, against UV light, for example. This isn't the case that I'm aware of, but these are things that you need to think about when you're looking at a project. Those are bigger scale things. But when you're talking about, you know, a resident or a fellow doing a project, you still could do that. And I personally think the best way to do that is a research project. You know, we have a lot of education in research projects, even if it's just a chart review. A lot of these places have a lot of data, but not necessarily the time to sit down and have mentorship on a research project. So again, I think that's a high impact thing because, you know, it's something that anyone can read and learn from and grow upon. And also really, again, this is where we have maybe some skills that we can help pass on and teach. And at the same time, the residents are going to be able to see a new healthcare system.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And thinking about how you've incorporated this into your career, if there's listeners who are early career, mid-career, who think, you know, gosh, I'd love to incorporate some global work into what I'm doing, but I have no idea where to start. Maybe this is something I was interested in back in medical school, but I've never done anything. Like, how do you even go about incorporating this into your career?
So, yeah, I would start, again, potentially with looking at the American Academy of Ophthalmology, their little course they have. I think it only takes, I mean, it's designed for residents, but I think it's only about, I have designed it now, I can't remember exactly how many hours it is, but I think it's only about 5 hours or so, and you can do it in little sections. So it's just kind of an introduction. And then other coursework on top of that, and I believe it's suggested as extra, would be, you know, especially if you want to do the public health portion of it, if you're interested in doing some research, collaborating in that way, would be looking at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. They also have some online courses that you can take. So I would do those two things. And then, again, I think working with someone with a public health background in a group so that you are looking at these unforeseen consequences is really important. So if you partner with an NGO and there's people there that are looking at that and you're just saying, how can I contribute? I think that's a really great way to do it, where you're probably really needed, but not going to be just kind of going in blindly to doing something. Mm-hmm.
I just took the shuttle over here from my case this morning with one of our Mayo leaders, and it was striking to reflect on both of our recent travels and relationships. And it seems like to me over my career, I've appreciated how international and local global work, health work, is really an ongoing CME effort. I mean, just providing other niches to serve differently, learn more, and also cross-pollinate. But we talked about how the roots of the Mayo Clinic started with this family of physicians that embraced international global health. The pattern of how frequently in the 1800s and early 1900s, the Mayo brothers traveled the world and brought back people here to Mayo, not because they were trying to go in and be heroically saving things in China or Mozambique, but because they were cross-pollinating, learning from each other, wanting to teach, but also wanting to learn. Mm-hmm. And I think you've shared with us and here in our practice that vision, and we celebrate that in our residency in our department because of what it means, not just for global impact, as we're all trying to do well, but also the beauty of being in practice in that environment. So I thank you for coming and sharing, you know, the spirit of what we've done here for a long time, but in a new chapter in your career here with us.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ashley, and congratulations on all your work.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You can find all episodes of the Mayo Clinic Ophthalmology Podcast on our website.
Thank you for listening, and we definitely look forward to sharing more